Hello, everybody, and welcome into another edition of the Return of the Roar podcast. Chris Watkins, Frankie Cardicelli, as always, joining us this week. Very special guest, Bobby Gerald of HoopObsession.com. Bobby, I know you were in Vegas last week. I definitely have to ask you this. Would you rather be in the scorching Vegas heat, or actually, I'm assuming you live in Sacramento or near Sacramento. Sacramento skies right now are incredibly ugly. Which one would you rather be in?
Yeah, I prefer the Vegas heat over the smoke for sure.
Yeah.
It's really we're in Rockland, and it's in the foothills. I think it's a little bit worse because we don't really get the Delta breeze out here. So, it just kind of sops in. I always say, you know, I have a lot of friends in the Midwest and stuff from auto racing stuff that I do. And I always tell them, you know, California is great, but to me, the worst thing about living in California is kind of this fire season, you know, that now has become a thing, and where it's like, you know, mid August through October, you know, we just deal with this, and my heart breaks every time I see, you know, what's going on for all these people. It's just, it's terrible. And then the smoke being kind of byproduct of all that stuff, you know, you just have to deal with it, but man, it's no fun, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it all happened so fast too. It's just, I not even 2-3 days ago, it was, you know, you can call it a beautiful summer day for Sacramento. It was about, you know, 96 and clear, but the other morning I woke up and just, you have that orange haze kind of coming through the window when you wake up, and it definitely is scary. And I remember a couple of years ago, the campfire up there in Butte County, that was just very scary, and you go outside for 5-10 minutes and I'd be worried about my lungs, and you can't even imagine just what those guys up there and those people have to deal with. But the smoke is tough, the heat is tough. Vegas is hot. It also was hot with Summer League. It was a very good Summer League for the Kings. Bobby, just kind of, I know you were there for the beginning portion. What was the most impressive aspect of the Sacramento Kings Summer League team? Because they won their second championship. We'll have to hang the banner up. Now it's 2014, 2021. But what was your biggest takeaway from their championship run?
I thought the defensive intensity and then the unity combined, I thought those were two things that really stood out. And I'm someone who likes to be data informed. So I'm always really in tune with what the stats are saying and this and that. But one thing I've learned over the course of the years, when I first started out kind of, you know, making this kind of a life study for myself, I was a lot more just driven by the analytics, and you'd have a hard time convincing me that intangibles meant what they really mean. And over the years, you know, I really lean on a couple of things. One is that defense literally is half of the game, and there just aren't defensive analytics yet that, in my opinion, do a great job of focusing in and identifying the players that really make a difference on defense. It's something you kind of need to see for yourself and have a feel for. And I think we saw that with Davion. You know, at the point, he's picking up the opposite point guard, and he's in their grill, man, and he's making it difficult for them. And Dave Yeager used to say, you want people to feel you. And man, you feel Davion Mitchell, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's in people's shorts. So I think it starts from there. And then you could see every time he would make a great stop or give an intense effort up front, then the bench would respond, and it energizes his teammates. And then that leads to offense in transition and the good kind of feel good offense. I mean, you know, when you get a defensive stop and then you get out in transition and score, that's the kind of stuff that brings teams together and gets them all hyped up, and it gets the fans hyped up. And so I just thought that was outstanding from this team. And, you know, I'll give a lot of credit to Bobby Jackson, you know, with kind of a keep it simple approach to coaching. You know, go out there and play. You guys know what you're doing, but bring the intensity. And then, you know, like a couple times, you know, Bobby can be pretty blunt, you know, and he'll say, like he said,
why we love him.
Yeah. We had guys out there thinking they were the Harlem Globetrotters, and, you know, if you do that again, you're not going to play. And I thought the combination of the the intensity on defense, the unity, and then Bobby's coaching, I thought was really impressive.
Yeah, you talked about the defensive impact of Davion, and I think it's the question that we're all thinking is he going to impact the team from day one? Do you see this team really make a switch? I mean, is it even possible to flip a switch as bad as the team was this last year? But is Davion the type of guy to come in day one and set the tone, and really you see it ripple throughout the team? Or is that too much to ask from a rookie?
I would just say this, that it certainly isn't going to hurt to have a guy that brings that intensity and does it. I mean, there's still always a part of me that's going to say you've got to prove it. You got to go out and show it that you can do it against the top-notch guys. Peyton Pritchard's a nice player. Some of the other guys in summer league are nice players, but they're not Damian Lillard. They're not even in practice what he's going to see against De'Aaron Fox. We'll see. But I think anyone with eyes could see that this guy is getting after it and bringing it, and that it had an effect on his teammates. And he has a track record of doing that too, right? I mean, you looked at Baylor, he did the same thing. He took the heart out of the Gonzaga team, and they ripped him apart. And I really thought that was going to be a good game, and it just wasn't. I actually thought the Celtics were going to smoke the Kings in the Summer League Championship game, and that didn't happen at all. I think what he brings is real.
And it's a good point, because it's Summer League, and like you said, we can't read too much into these things. But the thing that kind of stuck out to me was Boston, and again, it was one game, but their roster – they had Carson Edwards, Peyton Pritchard, Aaron Nesmith. They have guys that are going to be in the rotation, probably in the rotation next year,
yeah,
at least. And is it something that Kings fans can look at and be, I don't know if impressed is the right word, but satisfied watching guys like Jamias Ramsey, Robert Woodard, Nemias Keita, just these guys going out there and just taking it to a Celtics team that has NBA talent already?
Yeah, I would put a lot of that. I thought Davion played great. I thought Lewis King played great. I thought Jamias Ramsey really showed me something in Vegas. I didn't think he played particularly well in Sacramento, but in Vegas, I thought he played well. And just like a little tidbit, I was leaving one of the days. I watched a couple games, and I'm in the taxi line and there in Vegas, and out of the taxi comes Jamias Ramsey. He's arriving on his day off to watch basketball. And I just thought, that's good. You know what I mean? It's a small little thing, but that's good. That's what you want. You want guys that are involved and ready to get after it. And I thought Jamias showed a little more ability in transition than I had previously seen. And I also thought he showed a little more confidence in his shot. He just looked like a second year guy who had been around the block, whereas every other time previously that I watched him, he didn't look like that. It's probably the nicest way I could put it. Robert Woodard, I thought, really struggled. He has great length, and you see the physical tools. Not quite sure there, you know, what his future will be. Keita, I thought, looked good at times. I thought he did some decent things. I thought his hands were a little bit better coming in than what I witnessed in summer league. He had one really, if you guys remember, it was like a one-handed putback somewhere near the basket where he just like grapefruited the ball and kind of put it back in. I was like, yeah, now those are the hands I thought I saw in college. But then there were other times where there were some pocket passes that he just dropped. And so maybe it's just me. I downticked Keita just a little bit. He looked a little bit more like a G League center to me than a backup NBA center. But he's young too.
Bobby, we can't have you disrespecting Nemias Keita on the podcast, because we're trying to get views, man, okay? I don't know if you – like, Nemias is content gold, okay? We can't no. We can't have –
Okay, definitely not any disrespect. I respect all these guys. It's kind of my thing as a talent evaluator, in quotes. You know what I mean? To look at these guys, but He certainly is a big body, and he did do some good things on defense for sure. Yeah.
And he's gonna play in Stockton. He's gonna get a chance to play decent minutes off the get go. And when you look at kind of who can be on that Stockton Kings team, Lewis King, a guy on a 2-way contract, he was probably, besides Mitchell, the best player out of a summer league with the Kings. Do you see Lewis King as a guy who, if the Kings can't add any more depth at the small forward position, do the Kings convert him to a full contract at any point? Do you see that as a possibility?
I don't think it could be a possibility. He's still young. I mean, you know, and he definitely flashed potential. I thought his decision making was really good. He had 12 assists and only 2 turnovers in Vegas. Yeah, 6-1 assist to turnover ratio. And you know, for a guy who can make shots out on the wing and also put it on the deck a little bit and get into the paint, he impressed me. So, you know, I thought Lewis King was good, and I'd give him a chance. 2-way still sounds probably about right on him to me, but there's a chance. You know, that's a funny position in the NBA. I think to find guys on the wing that have length and the ability to put it in the hole is a very valuable thing. And you know, if you can be a wing with his scoring ability, but also be able to accurately shoot, you know, which is something he can improve as time goes on, then you can advance very quickly in the NBA. You know, look at a guy like Duncan Robinson. You know, if you watch Duncan Robinson in college at Michigan, you would have never anticipated that he'd be doing, you know, what he's doing and making the kind of money he's making right now.
He got paid.
Yeah, and Duncan Robinson obviously is a much better shooter than Lewis King, but Duncan can't even dream of doing some of the stuff Lewis can do off the dribble. So, you know, I think he's a young piece to continue to mold, and hopefully going forward, you know, that bears some fruit.
Someone that really impressed me from day one of the California Classic was Emmanuel Terry. I mean, just with his energy, he would come in. You know, he was a beast on the boards, and just like I said, his energy was you could feel it every minute he was on the court. Do you feel like maybe, I don't think Sacramento could give him a shot unless he wants to take a 2-way. Do you see him getting a deal somewhere else?
Maybe so. I mean, I thought he certainly played well enough for people to look at him and take him more seriously. You know, he had a cup of coffee in the NBA with Phoenix and Miami in 2018 and 19 season, and then kind of just fell off the radar. Certainly for me, I'll say he was someone I wasn't aware enough of. And I agree with you, Chris. His energy level, you know, it complemented the Kings each time he was on the floor. He's only 24 years old. He knows exactly what his role is. He's a 6'9 rim runner and rebounder. And I thought he did very well for himself in Las Vegas.
Yeah, and Emmanuel Terry, he's the exact type of player the Kings need. They need those guys that have the high energy and the kind of bounce he has. And especially when you look at the questions surrounding the future of Marvin Bagley. I'm not saying Emmanuel Terry is going to come in and replace Marvin Bagley, but depth at the forward positions is just kind of a question mark for the Kings. And when you look at a player like Emmanuel Terry, I don't think it would hurt having him as depth in Stockton. But then again, the Kings could have some moves up their sleeves. It's been a slow off season, not to kind of pivot off summer league. I just was kind of wondering what your thoughts were about the team as it stands right now. The training camp's probably, 5 weeks away at this point. Opening day for the NBA is in mid-October. The schedule comes out tomorrow. Do you think that the Kings have made all the moves, at least the big impact moves that they're going to make? Or do you think there still could be that dark horse move with a month to go until training camp?
I think given all the smoke we've seen with Buddy Hield, I'd still kind of be surprised. You know, maybe it doesn't happen before training camp, but I still think somehow, some way, Buddy's probably going to get moved. And again, I don't have any insight, inside scoop or anything like that. So I don't want anyone to think that I'm some plugged in guy that knows, you know, what Monty McNair is thinking, because I don't at all. But I just think, you know, given all that we've seen and how close there was to being a deal earlier, I would say that, you know, if anyone's going to be moved, it'll be Buddy. Getting back just real quick to Emmanuel Terry, you mentioned, you know, maybe back up 4 minutes at some point or something like that. I think he's strictly a 5. He doesn't shoot the 3 ball at all. It's another thing that I've kind of just come to recently is almost without exception now in the NBA, you can have one guy that's a non-3-point shooter, but if you go beyond that, you're in trouble. You know, it just that's just the way it is these days. Everybody's got to be able to shoot. So if he's your one guy that isn't a shooter, I think he has to be a five at this point.
Mm-hmm. Were there any? I mean, I'm sure there were. What non-Kings impressed you a lot in Vegas?
Cam Thomas,
the co-MVP,
LSU. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He was a guy I was a fan of and high on in college, and he just overwhelmingly confirmed all the enthusiasm, you know, that I had for his game. He hit a sudden death game winner, a free ball that kind of had that James Harden sidestep, you know, step back. He gets to the foul line with regularity, and he converts at a high rate. He was a 90% free throw shooter in college. In summer league, he shot like 85%. He got to the free throw line 9.7, almost 10 times a game in summer league. I just thought he was great. And to be able to witness that, you know, kind of in person, I sat close to the Brooklyn bench one game and watched Cam and just kind of watched how he interacted with coaches and teammates and stuff like that. You know, he's a stone-faced guy. You wouldn't know if he had 36 points or if he was, you know, 2 for 15. His expression doesn't change, but, you know, yes, sir, no, sir, and interviews and comes from a mother who's been in the military. I couldn't have been more impressed. Now, in college, he didn't play a lick of defense, and he was, I'd say, better than indifferent in Las Vegas, which is an uptick for him, because in the past, I'd seen him really kind of just look like, oh, man, I don't even care about defense. But he looked like he was caring and trying. So Cam Thomas was definitely one for me. Likewise, Jalen Suggs from Orlando. I was hyper to see him in person. Wanted to see if what I thought I saw on TV would stick out the same way. And it really did. His athleticism, just kind of his powerful presence that he has, exactly as I expected it. Man, he had a follow dunk in Vegas that was just ridiculous. I had to get up and like walk up a couple rows after that one. You know what I mean? It was yes. One of those kind of dunks that you just leave your seat. So he was great. I thought Jalen Johnson from the Hawks, he slipped to the 20th pick in the draft. Thought he was a really unique combination of size, skill, athletic ability. He averaged 19 points and almost 10 rebounds a game. In Vegas and shot the ball pretty well. So those are three guys. Suggs, Johnson, and Cam Thomas really stuck out. And then, you know, there's some guys that have been around a while. Antonio Blakeney, he was on the Portland team. He's 24 years old now, 6'4 scoring guard. And, I mean, just a bucket getter. Can put it in the hole, get you points any way you need them. So there was a few, definitely.
24 was young for that Portland Summer League team.
Yes, it was. You mentioned Jalen Johnson. I saw during the draft process that you were really high on him. Mm-hmm. I was kind of curious, was he your guy if you could have made the pick at number 9? And I know Mitchell was, I think, well, I'd like to hear your thoughts on the Mitchell pick too, just kind of your knee-jerk reaction to that. But who was your choice at number 9 on draft day?
It was Jalen Johnson. Yeah, that's who I said at the time. If it was me, I would have taken Jalen Johnson. But also, you know, at the same time, when Davion's name came up, I wasn't mad at all. There were a couple of guys where I was like, oh, please don't be, you know, and I don't want to mention names, but there were a couple of guys where I just didn't want, right? And then when they said Davion Mitchell, I was like, okay, I can get down with that because, you know, anyone who watched Baylor – and watch college basketball, just saw what that guy brings, you know, and I really think he's a winner. He's a culture guy. Certainly no one to be disappointed in the Kings drafting. There were several ways to go there, and I'm glad if it wasn't Jalen Johnson or Cam Thomas, who would have been my next pick, that it was Davion.
Can you kind of sell me on Jalen Johnson? Because I wasn't as high on him. I just, not that I thought he was a raw prospect. I just kind of like what you mentioned about the not only having one non-shooter. I'm not entirely sure confident, I should say, his shot's going to develop. But he's a ridiculous athlete. I mean, you see the type of things he's doing in summer league. He just kind of like reminds me. I think it's funny that he ended up in Atlanta because he reminds me of John Collins kind of in a way where it's like John Collins is like an iPhone 9 and Jalen Johnson's like the iPhone 10. It would just make me the, I mean, is that the sell really? Did I just sell myself?
No, I'm with you on a lot of that. I think Jalen's more wingy, if that's a word, than John Collins. I put Collins more in that, you know, traditional power forward who can stretch it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Jalen, I would say, is more of a wingy power forward who has, you know, kind of that, like I trust Jalen Johnson off the dribble and in transition as a passer a lot more than John Collins. So I think that there's that. I think he can get a rebound, rip it, and take off with the dribble. Jalen Johnson can. And make a good decision. So that's where I'm at. I'd also probably give Jalen Johnson a little bit more in the athletic ability just from a fluidity standpoint. I think John can get a little bit stiff sometimes. You know, and in Vegas, Jalen Johnson shot it. He shot 41% from three-point range and 81% at the free throw line. So you know, he kind of answered some of the questions. It was a real small sample size, obviously, in college for what he did. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes you just have to step back and look at the prospect. And for me, I just felt like overall there's too much talent there to overlook. But, you know, as we always say, let's check back in 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll have the answers to all of these questions.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think at 20, I mean, that's an absolute steal regardless. I think, like you said, the talent is there, and to get that kind of talent at 20 is – that's no question.
Especially on, like, that young Atlanta team too where they're pretty fun to watch. In the playoffs, they were fun to watch, and now you're at a young talent like Johnson. And Cooper, too, yeah.
He was fun. Like, you know, I don't know if he's a rotation – probably not a rotation guy for them. Skylar Mays is probably just ahead of him as far as being a sound decision maker. But Sharif Cooper, man, he has some special ability to see the floor and to make some crazy passes that are, you know, I think if there was a category for leading the NCAA and highlight passes, he would have been the guy.
Yeah. Well, when it comes down to – back to the pick at 9, we talked about who you liked, but the pick was Davion Mitchell. And Kings fans, I think the knee-jerk reaction that I saw on draft night was a little disappointed. I know the big name out there was Moses Moody. Everyone liked Moses Moody. They wanted him to come to Sacramento. How would you evaluate Moses Moody? Do you think he's a guy that would have fit on Sacramento? And based on what you saw in summer league, has that perception changed at all?
He was better than I thought. You know, Moses Moody to me was a guy I like the ability to shoot. I like his length. I didn't think he was a great defender. I didn't think he got after it enough, like kind of content to just be a scorer. I'm not sure there's a whole lot else to his game other than scoring. But he does that well and probably better than I gave him credit for. I thought he looked good in Sacramento. Thought he had one really good day in Las Vegas where I thought he was probably the best player of that day. Overall, you know, I think he's a solid pick. He's a guy who's going to shoot it. But again, just, you know, if it was Davion versus Moses Moody, and again, we'll know for sure in 5 years, but I just like the intangibles that Davion brings and the defensive intensity and ability. And that's not taking anything away from Moses Moody. I think he's going to be a good player. I guess I just prefer Davion.
And Davion obviously was in college he had the Auburn season and then 2 seasons at Baylor. When did he first kind of pop up on your radar?
Last year, beginning of the year, you know, in Baylor games, I started to notice that he had made a big improvement. So I'm talking about like 2019-20, not 2021. Yeah. So the
years and dates, they've all melted together at this point.
Yeah.
2020 just threw a wrench in everything. Perception of time.
So he was someone I didn't know anything about, like his freshman year at Auburn. I barely even remember him being there, although he played like 17 minutes a game, I think, as a freshman at Auburn. Then he goes to Baylor redshirts, and then he'd be a sophomore after that redshirt season in 2019-20, and that's when I started to see, you know, hey, this guy's interesting. You know, he looks like he can play. Shooting wasn't great. I think he was like a 32% three-point shooter. And then this past season, you know, he just takes a big jump in offense and shoots the heck out of the ball, shot like 44% from three-point range. And then the defense sticks out and Baylor's winning. And so then, you know, I think that's when most of the world was like, okay, this guy's the real deal. And then after the tournament, you know, he went from, I don't know if you guys pay attention to the mock drafts and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but you know, he's probably consensus teens, 20s guy. Mm-hmm. And then after the tournament, he's like, we're picking him sixth. You know what I mean? Like I kept seeing him just show up everywhere. It was like the first five were set in stone. And then all of a sudden there was going to be Davion Mitchell. So I one more just tidbit on the Davion thing, and this is neither here nor there, but it's just something I'll throw out, is my wife watches a lot of basketball with me. And she has an uncanny track record for being right about prospects. Like, and she doesn't speak out much about anyone, but when she does, she'll be like, I like that guy. I like that guy. I like that guy. And Davion was her guy all year. And when his name popped up, she did a little dance. She's like, that's my guy. That's my guy. So
that's always the best.
That's yeah. I love to hear it. Yeah. I love to hear it.
Yeah, so if wife streak is intact, we got a good one.
I'm confident now. I've never been more confident about the pick than I am. Right
yeah,
now.
I'm trusting that process for sure. I'm gonna trust that process for sure. And it comes down to Davion Mitchell. The talk right now of the Sacramento Twitter sphere is the three guard lineup. There's a lot of talk about the Kings are envisioning a three guard lineup with Mitchell, Fox, and Tyrese Halliburton. I'm just kind of wondering how you view that. Do you view that as something that you think could work? And I know it's a guard. The NBA is a guards game right now. Do you like the idea of a Fox, Halliburton, Mitchell three-guard combo?
You know, I've answered this question once before by just saying it, and I don't want it to sound like a cop-out, but that's, you know, it's really not my area of expertise as far as, you know, the coaching angle. I'm much more about trying to evaluate players and what I think their future will be given the landscape of the NBA. But I will say this, I think looking at it, you certainly could have, it comes down to who can you guard. And I think Halliburton can certainly guard threes. He's long enough. He's big enough. In my opinion, to guard threes in the NBA, especially today's NBA, because that, you know, threes are shrinking to around 6'6", you know, usually.
He had a muscle too. Apparently, he had 10 pounds of muscle, is what the reports are saying.
Which obviously he could use. But I just think it's not that much of a stretch at all to see him, you know, guarding threes. And then I think Fox could certainly guard any two in the NBA. And that would leave Davion on point guards. But I think Davion, given his prowess, can guard most of the twos in the NBA. So from that standpoint, I don't really see an issue with it. You know, I think college and NBA are two different things, but there certainly was something to what Baylor did there, having three guys who could take you off the bounce. You know, if it wasn't Mitchell or Butler, it was Macy Oteague, any one of them could get into the paint and create and do something. And, you know, that was valuable. And so I'd be really interested to see how that would look. You know, I haven't heard Luke Walton say that that's how he's going to do it. I think you could just as easily see, you know, Fox and Halliburton starting and have Davion come in as kind of that punt returner, special teams guy that just changes the tempo. I think that, you know, that could just as easily happen as some sort of three guard lineup. But yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to it. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like people are getting a little bit too far ahead of themselves, because when you talk about a three-guard lineup, I kind of think in the implication of that is a closing lineup. And, I mean, Davion Mitchell looks fine and looks like he's going to be not your, you know, average typical rookie in terms of his learning scale. But to expect him to, you know, enter the closing lineup, I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying that that's an ideal world that I don't think you can just assume. If anything, I would expect a three-guard rotation. I don't see any reason why you can't have, you know, if Fox is off, have Davion and Tyrese play and, you know, obviously fill in the blank. I don't know. I feel like that's a little step ahead.
No, I'm with you on that, Chris. I think it's really easy, and not to sound like the get off my lawn guy at all, but you know, after you've been around a little bit, you do kind of see that, you know, there's reality to rookie struggles. There's you know, the NBA is tough, man, and to crack the rotation and a lineup, I mean, it's really something. It's not a given. He's going to have to come in and he's going to have to prove it. And he's going to have to be better than, if Buddy's on the roster, he's going to have to be better than Buddy, or he's going to have to be better than, you know, I mean, and then who knows the way Luke Walton has his closing lineups. He drives me batty with his going small all the time, and Harrison Barnes at the four to close lineups and stuff like that. I'm like, man, that worked in Golden State when you had, you know, Steph and Draymond
and Clay
Thompson, but this is Sacramento and we don't have that. So can we please leave a center on the floor at all times, and then some semblance of a four man on the floor? Like, can I have a Bagley, a Metu? Dude, what was Metu? Let me get your take on that. So I feel you. He pushed him in the back and that would piss me off too. But dude, you just can't go socking somebody.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, and we've all probably played basketball or pickup or played in high school. And yeah, it's very jarring when you get knocked out of the air like that. And that was not a clean foul.
No.
But that being said, like you just said, Bobby, you can't come and throw a punch into his face. Like, he was going for the kill there. And it's just, you see it in basketball more so, where people have to get separated. And usually it's more bark than bite. But while I'm happy to see a player in a Kings jersey showing some fight after, especially in the last year, the Metu Valanciunas thing. That's a whole nother discussion about how should he have been hanging on the rim? Did Valanciunas? That no one coming to his aid definitely is something I think that was still in his head, and the fact that he didn't stand up for himself. Bobby Jackson after the game too. I think it's always on like your mind when it comes down to it, when something like that happens, but You can't go throw a punch at someone's face. Chris, I mean, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, he was wild to throw the punch. I mean, also, like, Chimezi, you're trying to dunk on the dude from, like, outside the circle. Like,
the three-point line.
Like, that's a little I mean, it's you're not just going – like, someone's not just going to allow that to happen. And, again, like, was it a clean foul? No, but was it dirty? I wouldn't say he really – gave him anything special. He knocked him out the air, like you said, Frankie. I think that can be jarring, but I've never been that high in the air before, so maybe when you're that high in the air, it feels pretty scary to come down. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe he was just really high in the air and he fell and he was like, that felt like that was really scary. But you know, yeah, don't just in general, Frank, we talked about this like 2 weeks ago when we were talking about fan etiquette. Like, just don't hit people. Just don't. Yeah. Like, don't. What are you getting in a fight for? Like,
I don't think. Yeah, I think it didn't warrant a punch. Like, Bobby, do you feel? I don't think it warranted him going to actually try to punch him in the face. Is that kind of the way you saw it too?
I mean, there's no place for that. I mean, you know, Chimezie's interesting. I mean, obviously he's feeling himself a little bit, right? I mean, Nigeria did their thing, and he's you know, he's already a confident guy. Like, he doesn't turn down shots. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but I mean, it's like, if the ball comes to him, it's a wrap.
It's going up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. I'm glad somebody else sees this, because sometimes I feel crazy.
Well, there was that run.
People like the aggressiveness. I get it.
He doesn't have that. I mean, you have to, at some point, you've got to, you know, get aggressive and score for yourself. And he does that. I mean, he fills that role. I guess that's his thing, is he's going to come in and give somebody some buckets.
Yeah. And I think that's what people see, and they're instantly just like, yeah, like, I like this guy. He's not afraid to look for his shot. And it's like, well, maybe, just that much, little bit of fear is healthy.
Absolutely, Chris. Absolutely. He needs to turn down about 15 to 20% of those and keep it moving.
Yeah, because he went on that hot streak. I think I can't remember what game it was, but he hit a hot streak last season. I think he hit 2 threes back to back, and then the next time down the floor, and you have to heat check. I get it, but the offense wasn't even set yet. It was like not even really a full on fast break, and he just pulls up. Like, he pulled up and just chucked a three, and it's just like, I mean, that's the kind of stuff where it's like, I could see Buddy Hield doing that, but Chemezi. My man, you gotta
earn those.
Get a clean look to just pull up from 30 and chuck it. But
I think he's about he's a 10 to 15 minute game NBA guy, in my opinion right now. Like, maybe a backup four or something like that that comes in and does that. And if he gets rolling on a night, he might really help you. But yeah, Chris, he has to improve the other aspects of his game and be a more complete basketball player.
Yeah, and I think especially, I mean, not to just continue to worry, I think defensively is really where I would like to see him improve, because to me, he should be one of the best shot blockers on the team. Mm-hmm. And with his body and his leaping ability, I would like to see him try and be a rim protector. And you really haven't seen his ability to play the five, which is where I think he could really be a mismatch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that all works out.
Especially, it's kind of hard to invite. I mean, we have five centers in the roster right now. I think Rashawn Holmes, Alex Len, Tristan Thompson technically is a center, but I know he plays power forward too. And then Cato was drafted. He'll be in Stockton, but do you think Damian Jones as well? That's Jones. My next point. Damian Jones had his option fully. His contract's fully guaranteed for next season. Mm-hmm. And that puts Metu in kind of an interesting spot, because he's partially guaranteed. Is there a world like where you think that Chemezi Metu might not be guaranteed come December and Damian Jones is – I just think it's interesting, because Chemezi is a guy I kind of think deserves a look. Like you said, 10, 15 minutes. He does have a lot of raw talent, athleticism. Like Chris said, he has wild bounce. He should be blocking more shots, and maybe he'll develop that down the road. I know he's 23, but do you envision him as a part of this Kings roster?
I think he has a chance. As much as we've been kind of crushing on him here just a little bit, he's a dude that, he did shoot 35%, I think, from 3-point range last year. So he can stretch the floor a little bit at that size. I see him more as a four than a five. And so, if Marvin Bagley's here and Marvin does his thing and Chemezi's the backup, I guess I'd be cool with that. But we'll see, they're still, I don't really know what to make sometimes of all the noise that surrounds Marvin. Obviously, the injuries are there. It is what it is. He can't go back and change it. He doesn't try to get injured. But at the same time, no one wants to hear that. Like, Kings fans are so sick of, excuses and different things with Marvin being out. It gets tougher and tougher to defend him all the time. And he hasn't handled everything maybe perfectly. But at the same time, man, I think back to when I was that age and how much, my parents' influence meant to me and different things I did. And it's just really hard for me to throw any stones at Marvin. So we'll see. I still believe in Marvin, the basketball player. I think he's, I don't think there are many guys who can run and get off the floor the way he can. He's gotten better as a 3-point shooter. We saw him last year trying to take some charges even, so I thought those were all good things. He just has to stay healthy somehow, some way.
Yeah, man. I 100% agree. Sometimes
the look on Chris's face, it's like,
because I'm right there with you. I totally believe in Marvin Bagley, the basketball player, and just all the off the court stuff. And like you said, I'm not too far off Marvin's age. Like, my parents would have a huge influence on me too. So it's hard. It is hard for me to throw stones, but I don't know. Yeah. It's a process.
It's frustrating. And I think Kings fans, and they don't do a very good job of supporting Marvin Bagley. Yeah, he's been hurt a lot, and people shouldn't go at him for that stuff. Because again, it's not his fault. He doesn't want to be injured. But it is something that always is on my mind because he's going to be good. I think he is going to be a good basketball player. I would like it to be here. It's just the question is can he? And again, we'll have an answer to that pretty shortly here if they roll in the training camp and no move is made. But Marvin Bagley is going to be a free agent next year. And I know that he said this offseason he sees the guys from his draft class. DeAndre Ayton was in the NBA Finals. He was shining. Trey Young put himself on the map, got a max deal. Then we all know about the L word. We don't really need to get too much into the L word. But if Marvin Bagley is able to put together a fully healthy season, what kind of potential do you see in him?
Oh, I think he's a 20-10 guy. I mean, he's a walking, 20-10 guy. He's, or maybe it's 16-10. I don't know. But, I mean, he can score and he can rebound. And he played a big role in college. He was a star in college. And he's shown flashes here. I really thought at first the inability to make three-point shots, I thought really hampered him because then he was kind of pigeonholed into really his only effective position was a five. Now that he can make threes, I think you can play him a lot more as a four. And that's what the Kings need, in my opinion, is someone else to play alongside Rashawn. That's big, because I just thought there were way too many games where Harrison's out there undersized as a four man and we're giving up offensive rebounds and just not defending strong at the basket. Not that Marvin's any great defender, but he has a potential with the arms and the size to be that guy. So people are sick of hearing it, but he's still young. What is he? Has he turned 22 yet? Is he still 21?
He just turned 22, I think, in March, I believe.
Okay.
Young guy.
Yeah. So, I'm with you. I just would hate to have us do, you see this sometimes in the NBA. One team does all the hard work and heavy lifting with a prospect and they finally get them propped up and they're ready to go and be a good NBA player. And then they give up on them and trade them to, someone else for the poo-poo platter. And I don't want that,
Yeah. Yeah, that would not be ideal, especially with someone of Marvin's talents and
everything
that we've invested emotionally and with draft picks. It would not be nice to just see him drift off.
It would be very. Go ahead, sorry, Bobby. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say another thing that, and maybe this is just me, but as a fan, and it's probably just a romanticized, fantasy, as a fan, but I like the teams that do it organically, like that start with their draft picks and as a fan base, you get to watch these guys mature and you feel like they're a part of your family. And to me, that's just the best way to be a fan of a team and to grow with a team. There's just something about that that I just really enjoy. So I hope somehow, some way that Marvin does, have an injury free season and he flourishes. And, there's some people who maybe will give him a second chance and kind of fall back in love with that player that we first saw in that first Capital or California Classic game where he was like dunking on fools and we're like, oh, look at this. We have an elite athlete. You know what I mean? So that's what I would like to see. To me, that's much more fun than Lakers fans. Sorry to tell you this, but I just don't dig it. I don't dig getting a bunch of old veterans and overpaying and kind of buying your way to wins. To me, I mean, I guess if you're a Laker fan, that's what you do, and so you'd stand behind it. And if I grew up in LA, I'd probably be saying, "What the heck are they doing in Sacramento? How come they never? How come they always put all their faith in the youth?" But that's how I like to do it.
I don't mean to come off like, and I don't think any Lakers fans are listening to this, so it's fine. I mean, I can say this. And when I was in college, I went in Chico, and I had a friend of mine that was a big Laker fan, and this was about 6 years ago. And his screensaver on his phone, and I'm not even kidding, was like every star player in a Lakers jersey. And back then, you know, LeBron wasn't – but the players on that photo were LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis when he was coming up. Yeah. And I thought about that today. I was like, it came true, but they're all like – Anthony Davis is a star, and he's only 28. But it just kind of – that premonition kind of came true a little too late in my opinion. Like you said, I don't think that adding a bunch of 34, 35-year-olds is going to be the pathway to a ring. I might be wrong. Maybe Russell Westbrook and LeBron James and Anthony Davis, they create a three-headed monster that defeats Brooklyn. I don't know. But it's just something I wanted to just tell you guys. I thought about that today, like that screensaver 6 years ago. it kind of came true, but also like it's just delusional because how do you have that edge of screen? That'd be like me having like Giannis in a Kings jersey on my phone, like dapping up Luka or Trae Young. It's just why do they do that? I just don't understand it. But I just wanted to.
Yeah. I think fans are a different breed, man.
For the record, I think the Lakers are going to be good just because they're just too much greatness for them to not be good. But yeah, I hear you. I didn't know you were a Chico guy.
Yeah, Chico. Just for a cup of coffee. I went to Butte before I came back here and finished in Sacramento. But I went to Butte College. Lived there for 2 years. Loved it. My girlfriend went to college there at Chico State. My parents in the Chico State. So I have some Wildcat in my blood here.
Right on. My parents used to live in Chico. So
really, it's a good town, man. It's a good town. It just kind of it's a little like I'm 27 now, and I think it's too old for like I can't really go out and party with the kids in Chico anymore. I'm not that age, but it's a great college town.
Let me tell you something. 27 is not old, brother. You need to, keep it. Trust me. As someone who was like a DJ into his 40s in nightclubs and stuff like that, you've got plenty of time. It's when they start, I'll tell you when you'll know. When you start going to the mall and they call you sir, that's when you know it's over. It's a wrap. As soon as they start calling you sir.
All right, fine. I'll be at Riley's in Chico tomorrow then. I hope everyone's ready. Just kidding.
Wow. I've been calling people I've been thinking it's a respect thing, and I call people sir all the time, and now I've learned I need to stop that because it makes people feel old.
Exactly. That's exactly
it's like ma'am. Like ma'am too. Like ma'am, I try to be respectful too, and I get a lot of bad reactions to ma'am, and I've stopped doing that. Now I say I don't want to say miss either, but like ma'am, I get more like, oh, why'd you call me ma'am then? That was respectful, but sir, same way. So to all you out there that are over the age of like 39, 40, I'll stop.
It was Damian Barling's birthday the other day, and I said, happy birthday, OG. And then he was like, OG is something that they call old guys. And I was like, I literally didn't respond. There's no way Damian's listening to this, but if he is, I'm like, I didn't say anything. Cause I was like, damn, man, you're right. I should have said
it's. I'm just teasing you guys, but it is kind of true. You know what I mean? There's a certain point. I'm just thinking like, so I was in Vegas last week. And so, okay, I'm 53 now. And I used to go to the clubs in Vegas all the time. And this time I finally, I think maybe the last three or four trips, I was probably still in my late 40s, not like getting it in at the club, but at least still, you know, checking it out, you know what I mean? Like going under the guise of, oh, I'm a DJ and I like to check out the DJs, or, you know, that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, it'll catch up with you, man. I'm just saying. So enjoy it while you can. If you're 27, you're youthful and they have plenty of time.
I'll cherish it. I definitely will. I will not forget that. I promise. And I'll stop saying it's a bad habit. My girlfriend and I we have this bad habit of saying, oh, we're getting old. But it's like we thought we were getting old 2 years ago, and then we'll think when we're 35, we'll think we're getting old. And when we're 40, so yeah, I think we should just enjoy it. And
I remember that though. Like that, I specifically remember that I had a DJ gig right when I was 35 years old, and I remember thinking, am I too old for this? Like it's, you know, and then you know, by the time you're 45, then you really start to think,
it's like, maybe it's like, am I too old now? Like every year,
you know, it's just like, you're never too old to have fun. You know what I mean? It's like, who cares? Just, shave the gray off and roll.
Definitely, man. My mom is 56 and she has more fun than I do. Probably she's
keep my grandma is, man. She's traveling to New Orleans like twice a month, going to Chicago. I'm like, yo, like,
all right,
that's great.
Well, Bobby, your father, Gary Gerald, obviously traveled all the time.
I'm the sure legend.
He's traveled all across the map.
Yeah, no, he's definitely, you know, doing the Kings for, he started in 1985 when they first came here. So I actually went with him to the very first practice. They were the Kansas City Kings, and they practiced at American River College. They came here right after, I think there was like two games left in the NBA regular season, and they were still the Kansas City Kings. And, you know, the word was out that they were going to move to Sacramento. So they came to Sacramento, had an open gym practice at American River College. Kings fans are there, you know, standing and cheering and going crazy. And, you know, they come out to do their layup line, and it's like standing ovation and noise and stuff. And Reggie Theus and LaSalle Thompson and Mike Woodson, those guys are looking at each other like, what in the world is, you know,
at this what junior is college basketball gym?
Yeah.
Were you there for opening night, the first game in Sacramento?
I was. I actually, so my dad, Kevin Harlan was the radio play-by-play voice of the Kansas City Kings at the time.
Legend. And also legend.
He did not want to move to Sacramento. So he wanted to, you know, do his thing, and because he was doing the Chiefs and other stuff. So he wanted to stay in Kansas City. So they were going to need a new radio announcer. So at the time, the guy in charge of the Kings was Joe Axelson. He was like the general manager. And he told my dad, you know, hey, we're looking for an announcer. I want you to try out. You've been suggested by, you know, some different people that would, you know, you'd be a good fit and this and that, but we need to hear you. So last two games of the 84-85 season, Kings played the Warriors and the Lakers. Lakers first, then the Warriors. And so I went with my dad. We went down to L.A., the games at the Forum in Inglewood. We had nosebleeds right up next to Chick Hearn, and my dad brought a little tape recorder radio. He called the game into a little tape recorder, you know, thing with a cassette. I kept stats for him, and he got that game on tape. And after the game, I remember, you know, going in the locker room and talking to these Kings guys, and I'm all into music at the time, and they just couldn't have been nicer to me. You know, Otis Thorpe and Reggie Theus were talking about music and fashion and all this kind of stuff, and I was just like, this is it. I love the NBA. Yeah. And the very next day, we flew to Oakland, played the Warriors, and we had courtside joints for that one, so that was great. So I kept stats for my dad. He called the game into the little tape recorder again, and it ended up that the Axelson guy, the general manager, he had to drive from Sacramento back to Kansas City as part of his move. And he listened to those tapes on the drive, and he called up my dad and said, you know what, for someone who hasn't done basketball in like over 10 years, you are a lot better than you had the right to be. And, you know, we think we want to go forward with you, you know, as the announcer for the Kings. So that's kind of how it all came together. And then he started out, you know, that next season, did all the preseason games, and yeah, I was there at that first game. It was against the Clippers in 1985. Derek Smith gave it to the Kings. I remember.
That's right, man, and it's something that I look at. And again, your dad, a guy who I grew up listening to G-Man. I mean, my dad and I would be in the car driving places. It was awesome to be able to have a guy as good as what he does as your dad. And I just was wondering, as far as being in, I never got to go to Arco One. I mean, I wasn't born yet. What was that environment? People talk about it still. Larry Bird, the missed free throws. I mean, what was that environment like in that first arena? Like, I know that Arco, that's right around the corner from me here. I'm in the Thomas. That's still standing. That it's not going to be standing much longer, but had its own sound that people will remember forever. But the first Arco, was it just a different feel?
Yeah, because it was so small. It was 10,333. And they put it together very quickly, so it was all wood-based, you know, floors for people to stomp their feet on. So it had like this, you know, the Arco Thunder, they called it, and people stomping their feet on those wooden floors, and it just made a certain noise that was pretty unbelievable. And it was real intimate. You felt like you were right on top of the players, even more so than Arco 2 or Golden 1 Center, which I think they still did a good job of keeping the intimacy, but that was just a different level of intimacy. Locker rooms were incredibly small, probably the worst and smallest locker rooms for visitors, you know, that you could imagine. The Kings locker room was nothing special. It was interesting. I actually used to work at the arena too. I used to run the audio board there and do the sound mixing. Got that job probably, I think, when I was a senior in high school.
Wow.
And that was a trip too, because at that time it was the World Wrestling Federation, I guess WWF was the thing. And so I'm not into wrestling, but I had to sit through a million trillion of those things that people would kill to see, like, you know, all the Macho Man Savage, the Hulk Hogan, all, I mean, they were regulars. They'd come through there all the time, and they'd give you a little music sheet, and, you know, early on, you know, I knew right away how fixed everything was, because they'd be like, okay, when he gets to this point of the show and he's got him in the corner, you know, and he's giving him this, then you're going to play this music. And yeah, it's like, okay, I got it.
In high school, that had to be like the coolest, like, flex to put on people. They're like, oh, I work at Arco.
It was a pretty cool gig. I can't find that at all. It was pretty cool. And then, you know, it was a different time then too, like and the players didn't make as much money, and it was just, everything was just different. Like, my dad was really friendly with those guys. They'd come over and eat at the house and, you know, and hang out. Like, so it was just a different time. I got to be friends with quite a few of those guys, you know, back in the days, and they treated me like a little brother. LaSalle Thompson, I remember, he had a fashion designer in Los Angeles that would make him clothes, custom clothes. Jeff Hamilton, I think, was the dude's name. And I was always like, man, LaSalle, you're stuck. You're always so fresh and this and that. So he, unbeknownst to me, had Jeff Hamilton make me like a jean suit with a jacket and leather and all this kind of stuff. It was too big, and it was, you know, whatever. I didn't care, man. I was like, I'm wearing this, you know. And then LaSalle, every once in a while, I remember one day I was at the arena doing something for audio, and the Kings were having a practice there, and I wanted to go get some lunch, and LaSalle's like, here, and he throws me the keys to his Mercedes, and he's like, you know, go get some KFC. I'm like, let's go. Let's go.
Man, that is awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, so
those really were the days. I mean, I was so privileged beyond belief, just because I, you know, got lucky and was the radio announcer's kid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a favorite on the court memory?
Or like a game that you're at, like, is there a game like that stands out to you? Like a moment that was just like reigned supreme?
There's two or three. The first year they beat the Celtics, who went on to win the world championship. That was huge. When they played Seattle in the playoffs, what was that, 94, 95-ish? Yeah. That first home game, I was actually doing radio at that time for KHDK. Was it KHDK? Yeah, it was KHDK. It was. And the intensity of the noise was just incredible. It was, you know, the Kings are in the playoffs and hadn't been in so long since that first year. And the people just went crazy. And so just to hear, that's the loudest I've ever heard any arena, anywhere, anytime, anything. I mean, concerts, anything. It was just like, it was incredible. And so that one definitely sticks out. I wasn't there, but the game in Chicago where they came from, like, what, 35 points down?
I think it was 38, yeah.
Yeah. So 35, yeah. Those are some of those once-in-a-lifetime type things, you know, that you're going to see. But that's why I love basketball, because you just never know, right? I mean, on a given night, you just don't know what you're going to see. Sometimes it looks like it's going to be a blowout, and then the second half things completely reverse fortune, and your team's on top. So
let's not talk about the Brooklyn game from two seasons ago when the Kings had a 27-point lead. That's my game where I will always remember. I'll remember that game when I'm 80 years old. I'll be like, oh yeah, it was a 27-point lead with 11 minutes left, and then it got down to 15, then it got down to 10, then 8, and then D'Angelo Russell will haunt my nightmares. But
that was the D'Angelo Russell game, right?
Yeah, it was a D'Angelo Russell game, and it's funny you say that the Sonic series. It's just that's one that I've heard, and I think I was one or two when that happened. It's one that I have heard every year as a Kings fan. People always say, like, they'll compare this to that series against the Sonics, and it is just something I just wanted to point out, that I wish we got to witness some of this stuff. I know we're hopefully we'll get to sit and witness some good times ahead, and Golden One can have some better days. But it's just really cool that you got to experience all this stuff, man. Like, it's awesome. So we'd love.
Yeah, it really was. I like I said, I've been blessed to be the son of the radio guy for sure. You know, through just, you know, different connections and different things. And I had my own little cup of coffee with the team there for a couple of years, and wasn't very good at it, and it didn't work out for me. And you know, it's just things are different. And I wish I could go back and do a lot of things different. That's why I'm always so, I guess, forgiving of the youth and different things that go on, especially when it comes to, you know, the parents and their influence and different things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, we appreciate you being on. You're awesome, Frank. Do you have any
No, more? just thank you, Bob. We'd love to have you on again soon. And just, and honestly, just your stories are captivating for me. I mean, a guy that grew up loving the Kings, like I love hearing all this stuff. So just we appreciate you and you're obviously you're great at what you do. We love seeing what you do, Hoop Obsession, and it's things that myself and others out there that don't watch as much college basketball definitely I think appreciate is being enlightened on some of these guys, and we just appreciate having you on, man. Please come back again soon.
I would love to. I really enjoy the conversation. I appreciate both of you guys, and if anyone wants to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Bobby Gerald. You can find me right there, and hoopobsession.com. I'm finishing up. Every year I do a long summer league wrap up, and so I'm finishing that up. Should have it posted here in the next couple of days, I'll say, and that'll have more of a deep dive into everything that I saw there at summer league, and also some tidbits about good places to eat there. I mean, you know me, I'm gonna cover all of it.
So. We need it all. You heard him. Everyone follow Bobby, please. The great content. Obviously, we all know what's food spots to eat at, too. So let's talk to Bobby. Thank you so much, man.
You got it, guys. I appreciate you.